Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. So, I want to talk about freedom today. Happy 4th of July. A little late, but I thought in honor of Independence Day, I'd say something about freedom, about Zen freedom. I'm a fan of... I don't usually do much on the 4th, but I am a fan of liberty, of the values that the founders of this country came forth with. It was the first, it was the first time that Enlightenment values were put into practice in a country. I love that. I was an American studies major. My parents were colonial historians, so I got a lot of karma in that department. And then this spring, my daughter and I went through a Hamilton phase, and we got it bad. The kind of freedom that we celebrate, that's celebrated in that musical, that's celebrated in America, is the freedom from political oppression. Britain keeps shitting on us endlessly. Essentially, they tax us relentlessly. Then King George turns around and runs a spending spree. He ain't never gonna set his descendants free. So there will be a revolution in this century. Enter me. Yeah. Like that. My daughter does it way better. But, and the freedom too, I think, those founding brothers, to speak and to think and to move as we please. The freedom that Zen offers is different from that, even though I'm into that other. It's not political freedom. It's freedom from concepts, from identities that bind us, that hem us in, and that have us think narrowly about the world, about other people. And it's the freedom to act, more wisely and more creatively. And that's what I want to talk about today, more than anything. So, though July 4th, freedom deals with this kind of shape of our society, Zen freedom is concerned with the individual person, with you, with bringing individual people to a new understanding and a new way of acting in the world. Zen freedom is not the kind of freedom we get through revolution and protest, though that freedom is very good, often. But it's the freedom we get through spiritual discipline and insight. Though it's done in community, it is done in community, but it is also a hard-won personal journey. This freedom, that kind of freedom. So I want to talk about three different Zen texts. It's a little ambitious, but I'm going to go through them quickly to talk about Zen freedom. By the way, there's a lot about freedom in Zen. You know, those of you who have read the old Zen texts, free, the word free, the word freedom comes up often. Song of Zazen, you know, that we sometimes chant here. Boundless and free is the sky of samadhi. I checked it out. Of the 48 chapters of the Mumenkan, the great koan collection, 10 of them, doesn't sound like that many, but I thought that was a lot. Use the word free or freedom. It's a goal in the Zen school. And the first two talk about freedom in different ways. Mumenkan 1 is a very famous one. Joshu's Mu. So this Zen master Joshu is approached by a young monk, and the young monk asks him, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? And Joshu famously answers, Moo. Moo means no. What? A dog doesn't have Buddha nature? I thought everything had Buddha nature. That moo, that no, means no, you're asking the wrong question. No, go beyond yes and no. It's that big no. It's that big, that's what the mu that he's referring to is there. How do we do that? We do it by practicing with great resolve, and the commentary to that koan, the first koan of the Mumenkan, is full of how you should practice with great resolve. By giving up your questions about does or doesn't. By giving up all your likes and your dislikes, by giving up everything. By giving up everything. That's what we ask you to do in Zen, is to give up your family, to give up the Buddha, to give up your thoughts about everything. To die to yourself. And then, says Mumenkan 1, though you may stand on the brink of life and death, you will enjoy the great freedom, it says. In the six realms and the four modes of birth, you will live in the samadhi of innocent play. So that's the promise there. Having given up our lives, having been on the brink of life and death, then we can feel great freedom. So the fundamental Zen tenet is that there is another kind of freedom than the freedom that we normally associate with that word. That is deeper than maybe beneath that normal call of freedom. It's not just the freedom to choose this or that we desire in our lives. It's the freedom to live or die. The one, the freedom to choose, I think of as in a freedom in the horizontal realm, to be able to choose this or that, to be able to move what we think of freely. But there is another freedom, and that is the freedom of the vertical freedom. The freedom to move this way. To move between life and death, to give up ourselves and to reclaim ourselves, to be born anew. And that's the work that we do here. We make ourselves vertical. We commit to not moving to not doing all of our choicey things in the horizontal world. And we learn to do something else. We learn to die and to resurrect. To give ourselves up and to pick ourselves up again. To come and go, to gain, to lose and gain. And that's what we practice every day in Zen. We ask you to practice that every day. And if we can integrate this as well as this, then we have a kind of three-dimensional freedom. When my kids were young, you know, I learned, maybe some of you parents had the same experience, I learned to give my kids choices. They like it. It's helpful. But within a narrow band. So, for instance, would you like peas or carrots or grapes with your lunch today? And then they get a choice, and that usually works. Then they don't even think about ice cream. Here's the choices. And that reminds me of the kind of choices that we normally make. We don't even think about giving ourselves up. We don't think about this freedom. We just think about the freedom to choose this, or this goodie. And the practical result of this, I believe, this three-dimensional freedom, is that we have more freedom of movement in this world, in this horizontal world in which we live. We can't stay forever in this world. Because when you don't have a conception of this vertical world, then the band that we operate in can feel narrow, our lives narrow. There's the image I had when I was thinking about this yesterday was it's like there's a cap on the sky. The clouds are dense as we move through the world, and heavy. And when we practice with the art of living and dying, it's more possible, like Mumon says, to lift that, to practice the samadhi of play. To be more free to act. And yet, Mumin Khan 2 comes along, the second of the Mumin Khan. And that reminds us that freedom that we feel, that freedom to move, is not the freedom to flit around as we please. The second chapter of the Mumin Khan is Hyakujo's Fox, which is the story of a monk who was asked whether an enlightened person, somebody who's well familiar with all this, is free of the law of cause and effect. And he said, 500 years ago or something, he said, yes, that's right. An enlightened person is free of that. And then he was doomed to become a fox over and over again, life after life after life, for 500 lives. Then, in the story, he's given a chance to re-answer it. And he gets the answer right this time, which is that everybody is subject to the law of cause and effect. Please do not forget it. You may sit and lose yourself and feel that there is no care or don't care. There is no difference between good and bad, fundamentally. But when you come back into the world, you have to observe the laws of cause and effect. You have to get to know them. You have to work within them. Everybody is subject to the law of cause and effect. Everybody must live with the consequences of one's own actions and therefore act with care. And then the curse was lifted from him. So the freedom of Zen, gained from Zen, is not meant so that we can act selfishly or as we please. It's meant so it exists, this practice exists so that we can work more skillfully. within the laws of cause and effect, and with more wisdom and spontaneity and creativity to help other people. And that brings me to my last freedom text, and that is Dogen's instructions to the Tenzo, to the cook. And he ends that text, the very end of it is, he entreats his monks to find vast mind, the one that sees the whole picture of life and of death, and that doesn't, that sees, I meant to bring it and I forgot to, but here's the gist of it, to be able to see the cycle of life and death, to be able to see the cycle of everything. So he says, don't just see too heavy. See heavy and light. See too heavy as in the context of heavy and light. Don't just see happy. See that in the context of sad and happy. And he says, when you do that, you don't have to make a nest in a spring garden and live there forever. And you don't have to darken with the fall, with the colors of autumn, because you know it's part of a cycle. And then he says, that mind, when you can find that mind, that leads to freedom, he says. The freedom to act creatively to help others. And this is the way he puts it. If the Tenzo at Jishan had not studied the word vast, he could not have woken up Elder Fu by laughing at him. If Zen Master Guishan had not understood the word vast, he would not have blown on dead firewood three times. If the monk Dong Shan had not understood the word vast, he could not have taught the monk through his expression 3 pounds of flax. All of these and other great masters through the ages have studied the meaning of vast or great, not only through the word for it, but through all the events and activities of their lives. Thus they lived as a great shout of freedom through presenting the great matter, penetrating the great question, training great disciples, and in this way bringing it all forth to us. Those examples that he uses are examples of these crazy Zen stories where somebody asks a question and the answer to the question, the answer that they get is to by blowing on dead firewood three times. That's an example of creative thinking, of thinking outside of the box of our everyday lives, and of helping others think that way too. So he uses examples here of creativity, of the creativity of the masters. And I know for myself, you know, when I feel blocked, my life narrows, and when I feel fixated, when I feel stuck in this world, I can't act with as much creativity. I just have a harder time doing it. I have a harder time finding it. And yet, when I, often after a sitting, even more after a few sittings at a service, even more after a retreat, when I come back to my life, so many more options. So much less heavy. It's, there's that great phrase from Suzuki Roshi. You know, in the mind of the expert, the options are few. In the mind of the beginner, they're vast. To find that mind that is open to possibility, rather than, oh, I'm an expert, I know all about that person. And this practice allows us to let go of that over and over and over again, to let go of that expert mind that has everything in its grip. That's really all I want to say. I want to encourage you to do this practice sincerely, to work every day to give yourself up at least a little bit, whether it's just walking to pick up the mail, whether it's sitting zazen every day. Whatever it is, learn to let go of yourself, of your life, to enter this vertical plane. You will carry that with you. You'll carry the memory of that with you. And over time, that will help you and it will help me act with more spontaneity, more creativity, in order to help others, more freedom.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.